I wouldn't put it past him if he was controlling all of this. Like a puppet master, Ruby said. I got that impression too. He mentioned it at one point, but then quickly backtracked. He hints that he knows things to reel you in, but then he laughs it off when you want to know more. He's definitely enjoying playing the game. He'll squeeze more information out of you than you'll get from him, Down said, his voice edged with a warning. I remember him in interview. Only the most experienced officers were allowed in. He's very manipulative. I guarantee he'll be planning your next visit already. He eyed Ruby with concern. Don't get sucked in. If you've got nothing useful, it's not worth going back there. We'll see, Ruby said, taking another bite of a sandwich. Perhaps we'll get this wrapped up quickly and I won't have to. With our resources? Downs gave her a wry grin. See out that window? Ruby followed his gaze out to the streets below. Yes, why? You're more likely to see a herd of pigs come flying past. Ruby withdrew her gaze with a snort. You're pessimistic today. I'm being realistic. There's staff shortages all over at the moment. People are overworked and dropping like flies. Keep an eye on the team. We can't afford for anyone to go off with stress, not with DCI Worrell breathing down my neck. Ruby sighed. The existing team were buried under a mountain of work due to staff shortages, which in turn caused people to go off sick as they buckled under the pressure. She was not into politics, but under the current government, things had never been so bad. It was less strong and stable, and more stressed and struggling. Have you looked over his old case files? She said. I've read a fair extent. 6 murders. It's amazing just how far he got. Downs nodded in agreement. Shocking, more like. And it wasn't due to a lack of effort on our part. He's a clever bastard. He'd been planning his campaign for over a year. He had all these different scenarios worked out. But in the end, it was his own arrogance that got him caught out. He thought he was untouchable. I think he still does, despite him being on the inside. He mentioned Lenny, you know. Ruby lowered her voice as she spoke. I think that's half the reason he allowed me in. He knows about me and Nathan. I think he's curious as to how it all works. Then it's all the more reason not to go back there. You've far too much to lose. Downs's face hardened at the mention of her lover's name. He was one of the few people Ruby trusted with the details of her love life. She knew how bad it sounded, dating a man known for underworld crime, but her friendship with Downs ran deeper than their association in the police. Their brief fling while she was on a break from Nathan had served to cement their bond even more. The victims have plenty to lose, too, Ruby said. So we'll play it by ear. Mason Gatley was responsible for the deaths of 6 women. That sort of bloodthirst did not end overnight. He would relive the horror in any way he could, whether it be talking about it or encouraging somebody else to do the same. How's the investigation going? Ruby asked. Did you explain to Worrow why I wasn't at the briefing? Aye, she already knew. She gave me the glare. The one where she looks like she's crawled out of her own backside. Ruby blurted a laugh at Downs's disdain. I have no idea what that even means, but it sounds foul. Downs shrugged. She's panicking about keeping this on a need-to-know basis. All the same, we need to be ready in case it hits the press. It's Philip bloody Sherman, for God's sake. How's he been coping? Ruby said, briefly opening the door to take 2 cups of watery-looking tea from Richard. She tried not to frown as she thanked him, making a mental note to relay her preferences later. Better than expected, Downs replied, taking a cup from Ruby's extended hand as she closed the door with her foot. That laptop they found hidden in Melissa's bedroom. Philip said he knows nothing about it, but I'm still keeping my eye on him. For all we know, this could be some elaborate setup. He's recovering well from her death. A bit too well, if you ask me. Ruby nodded. She knew that Downs had personal knowledge of grief, having lost his wife to cancer over a year before. But people grieved in different ways. Maybe the fairy tale marriage wasn't such a fairy tale after all, she said. Perhaps he wanted to get rid of her, but she wouldn't leave because of the prenup. Ruby thought of the photographs and the crime scene she had viewed. Surely the expression of horror on Melissa's face could not have been extracted by somebody she knew. Have you shared the old case files in briefing? They could be relevant. God, what kind of piss water is this? Downs replied, making a face as he knocked back a mouthful of tea. Placing the cup on the table, he carried on. I want investigators to go into this with an open mind. It's enough that we know about it. We don't have the luxury of delegating this to anyone else. What was his motivation? Ruby said, a question that the old case files failed to cover. He got pissed off when I said it was down to an abusive past. He had a decent childhood, no worse than most. He seemed to do it just for kicks. There was no remorse. He's just a vicious, calculating bastard. That's all there is to say. Ruby watched as her detective inspector's jaw clenched from the power of his words. It was obviously a case that still stirred up a lot of anger, even after all these years. In a way, it was reassuring to know he had not become desensitized to other people's pain. You mentioned the laptop that was found at Melissa's address. Anything of interest on it? Ruby said. One thing I've gathered is that she willingly met a mystery man. It seems that our victim was playing away. Chapter 16. How are you feeling now? Matthew said, handing Cheryl a glass of water as she perched on the side of the four-poster bed. She seemed in a haze, her breath reeking of the alcohol she had consumed. Woozy, she replied, swiping for her glass and missing. Goodness, I shouldn't have taken that tablet. Does it always affect people like this? My voice feels really far away, like it's not coming from me. She slowly waved her open hand in front of her face and giggled. My hand. It feels weird. I don't know what to make of it. Another giggle erupted, and she put her fingers to her mouth. Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry. I've come over all funny. You're fighting it, Matthew said, pressing the glass of water against her lips until she took a sip. It's been so long since you've had fun, you don't know how to let go. After placing the glass on the bedside table, he removed her shoes and lifted her legs onto the bed. Seconds later, he was lying beside her, watching her intently. He smiled as he watched the drug take effect. Cheryl had not been as easy to convince as his previous date. Thankfully, she had a trusting nature and, after a few more drinks, had caved in. Relax, he said, cupping her cheek, his palm warm against her flesh. Breathe nice and slow. Give in to the feeling. Now, isn't that better? Leaning forward, he kissed her gently on the lips. Yes, that is kind of nice, she said, her giggles abating. Swiftly, Matthew slid his phone from his trouser pocket and flicked the camera app into life. Tilting his head out of shot, he knew he could crop any of his distinguishing features. As long as it was enough to make Cheryl appear she was happy to be here, in bed, with someone other than her husband. What was that? Cheryl said, as Matthew slid his phone back into his pocket. Just the aircon controller, Matthew said lightly. He had already set the air conditioning to low. Things started to smell when the room got too warm. He exhaled a breath of relief as Cheryl slowly closed her eyes. He didn't want to have to kiss her again. In truth, he didn't find her attractive. But then this wasn't a sexual encounter. That was what differentiated him from Mason Gatley. The promise of sex was just a means to a bigger end. Snorting, Cheryl took a breath and opened her eyes. I almost dozed off there. What must you think of me? Lifting her wrist to her face, she squinted at her watch. How long have we got left? Matthew rolled his eyes before plastering on a smile. Enough to do what we came here for. I was just letting you catch your breath. Bouncing onto his knees, he took her left and right hand, pinning them above her head as he straddled her. Clamping his legs around her body, he held on tight, getting a feel for the strength she had left. Why don't we play a game? He said, a wicked grin spreading on his face. Something to really get you in the mood. Cheryl bit her bottom lip, flushed at the sudden physical contact. I don't know. This feels all wrong. Trying to raise her head, a flicker of concern crossed her features as Matthew held her down. I'm sorry, she said. Can you let me go? You can keep the money. I don't think this is such a good idea after all. But each time she tried to rise from the bed, Matthew forced her back down. He hadn't come this far for her to change her mind now. Not that it would matter. Her black intentions were set when she came here. It was too late for forgiveness now. Licking his lips, he lowered his body on top of her, inhaling her perfume as he nuzzled the crook of her neck. I shouldn't, she moaned, her breath growing heavy. Releasing her hands, Matthew silenced her words with another lingering kiss. Good girl, he said, reaching for his bag at the side of the bed. Remember what I said about letting go? Close your eyes. You're going to get everything you deserve and more. His words did not concern Cheryl, as she had fallen into unconsciousness, her head lolling to the side. Matthew knew he had very little time until she awoke again. Working swiftly, he bound her wrists and ankles, just as he had the woman before. He was becoming quite adept at knot tying. He smiled. His years as a scoutmaster had served him well. What's going on? Cheryl murmured, her eyelids fluttering as she awoke. Just a bit of fun, Matthew said. Just close your eyes and let me do all the work. Chapter 17. Clutching the cordless phone, Matthew dialed the number that was his lifeline. At 3 in the morning, the remnants of a storm still rumbled outside, driving the wind down his bedroom fireplace in a ghostly howl. He had plugged the gap with newspapers, but, much like his emotions, the gale came with a force too strong to be halted. He hated his bedroom, the cold, unforgiving floor, the old-fashioned furniture, and the joyless view. Hello, sanity line? The tone was deep, spoken from an accent he did not recognize. Matthew blinked as he returned to reality, having taught himself how to switch between two worlds with ease. It's Matthew. I was hoping to speak to Laura. Is she there? He spoke abruptly. He was in no mood to be courteous today. I'm a good listener if you'd like to talk, the man on the other side said. Matthew's natural distrust came to the surface. What's your name? I'd feel better if I knew what to call you. I'm Joseph, the call taker responded. Why don't you tell me what's been bothering you? Matthew frowned. He had left Cheryl drugged and unconscious in the hotel, but now that he was away from her, contradictory thoughts were making themselves known. They whispered words of forgiveness, passages of the Bible preaching about the sanctity of life. He took a deep breath, preparing to bare his soul. Lately, it's been like swimming against the tide. I want to do the right thing, but I keep getting conflicted feelings. He exhaled a resigned sigh. Have you ever been in love? Do you know the pain that it brings? Joseph was quick to respond. I'm sure it will help to talk it through. How tough have things gotten for you? Are you feeling suicidal? Matthew replied with a grunt. You know, I usually answer no to that question, but today I'm not so sure. I don't want to hurt myself, but sometimes I feel like it might take the edge off my frustrations. He thought about what he did to Cheryl in the hotel, how his blind anger had taken over. That other side of him that he could not stop. Was this really part of God's plan? His head felt foggy and out of sync. He exhaled, his voice groggy. He hated having to recap on what was previously said. The last time I called, it was for advice about Cheryl, a married woman I was seeing. I wanted to make her see that what she was doing was wrong, meeting me for sex behind her husband's back. And did you tell her? Joseph said. Oh, yes. I left her in no doubt that what she was doing was wrong. I'd planned it down to every last detail. It strengthened me, knowing I was doing the right thing. What happens now? Joseph said, and Matthew could feel his call-taker's interest growing. My head is buzzing with conflicting thoughts. One side of me says what I'm doing is wrong. That's the side that's talking to you now. But when I'm with them, and I think about what they've done, I'm compelled to carry out my plan. How does that make you feel? Joseph said, his voice soft and calming. Right now? Lost. I feel lost, Matthew replied, his words loaded with emotion. And it's not as if I can talk to anyone else about it. They wouldn't understand. I feel like I'm on the precipice of something big, but I'm not quite ready to let go. You mentioned they, as in plural. Are you talking about more than one person? Joseph said. Perhaps, Matthew said. You wouldn't believe how many people are willing to cheat on their other halves. He had calmed now, his emotions like the ebb and flow of the tide. Silence fell as he examined his mind for answers. He knew he was being vague, purposely so, but it still felt good to talk to another living soul. Not one with clipboards or prescriptions, but someone normal, just a regular guy you could meet down the pub. Not that Joseph was chatty. He just kept repeating the same questions in that monotone voice. How does that make you feel? Joseph said, his response ill-timed. How the fuck do you think it makes me feel? Matthew shouted down the phone. Is that all you can think of to say? If I didn't know better, I'd think I was onto an automated line. It just goes to show that you don't care. Nobody does. Sorry. Joseph cleared his throat. I'm just trying to help you express your feelings. So many people go through their day saying that they're fine. Matthew nodded into the phone, agreeing, at least with his sentiments. No, I'm sorry. It's my moods. One minute I'm fine, the next... He sighed. I went to church today. I wanted to confess. Sometimes I feel like I'm losing my mind. I try to act normal, but on the inside, all I can think about is the betrayal. It drives me to do desperate things. I have compulsions. What sort of things? Joseph said, filling the silence that fell between them. You talked about your plans and how you're compelled to carry them out. What are you referring to? Trust me, You don't want to know, Matthew said in a low voice.
It might help to talk, Joseph replied.
Matthew smiled. He was not so robotic now. A nervous giggle speared the line, and he realized it was coming from him. Sometimes I feel like I'm losing control. I think I'm doing the right thing, but then I'll hear this voice from deep inside telling me it's wrong. That's what tortures me. How do I know which voice to listen to? What do you do when you've more than one speaking in your head? His words died in his throat, and the only sound was Matthew's breathing on the line.
It's just not fair, he said, wrapped up in his annoyance. Those women, they drive me to it, filling up my inbox with their lurid suggestions, the flirting and teasing. Someone's got to stop them.
Matthew wiped a sweaty palm on the leg of his jeans after he switched the phone handset to the other hand. They're like a drug to me. I'm addicted, that's what it is. I can't get them out of my head, and one is never enough. Do you know what a mammoth task it is, trying to stop them all? Sometimes I feel so overwhelmed.
How can you move forward from here?
Yet another textbook question. Matthew rubbed his mouth, as if trying to contain his words.
What are you doing? A voice whispered from within. You've already said too much.
Closing his eyes, he inhaled deeply through his nostrils, holding the air in his lungs as he made his choice. He exhaled, calm now. This time his voice was firm, resolute. I keep doing what I'm doing. Stay focused. They're the wicked ones, not me. My intentions are good. Another deep breath, as if to strengthen himself for what lay ahead. Thanks for the chat, but I have to go. I've got some unfinished business to take care of. Chapter 18. It was still dark when Ruby went to work. There was nothing she would have loved more than to stay snuggled up in bed with Nathan. As always, there were more pressing matters at hand. She barely noticed the dim light in the corner of the office and jumped when she saw a figure hunched over their computer. It was Richard, his wide-rimmed glasses shoved down the bridge of his nose as he analysed the data on his screen.
What time did you get in? Ruby said, composing herself.
I never left, he said, unsmiling as he continued to peer at his monitor. Ruby walked around to his side of the desk. There were times when she had felt like pulling an all-nighter, but her DI had rightly sent her home for a few hours' sleep. Burnout was commonplace when working under such pressure. Tiredness slowed you down and fogged your thoughts. Well, in that case, you need to go home for a few hours' kip, she said. There's no point in being dead on your feet.
I got sleep, he said, turning his swivel chair to point to a bag in the corner.
A rolled-up sleeping bag was tied with some string next to a grey rucksack. Ruby smiled as she shook her head.
Where did that come from?
I keep it in my locker in case of emergencies, Richard replied, as if it were the most normal thing in the world. It's just as well, as we've had another missing persons report.
Already? Ruby said, feeling crestfallen. When did this come in?
An hour ago, but the call takers didn't think to make us aware. I found it when I was trawling through the CAD reports.
Richard examined his paperwork, pulling out a printout of the incident. Here's the latest update. Ruby took the paperwork and, whipping out her reading glasses, pored over the details. Informant Gordon Barber had called at 6:55 a.m. to report that his wife had failed to return home. After calling friends and family to check her whereabouts, he called police and mentioned the discovery of an envelope that had been posted through his front door just prior to midnight the night before. Contained in the envelope was a photograph of his wife,
which appeared to have been taken recently. A tag had been placed on the report for uniformed officers to visit his address. A further update had gone on the incident to say that DC Richard Moss had arranged for Gordon to attend the station at 8 o'clock, where he would speak to a member of the team. "It was the earliest I could get him in here," Richard said. "His sons don't know, and he wanted to wait until they'd left for work."
"It might not be connected to our case. I know there's a photo, but it's not a given at this stage. If she went missing last night, then her kidnapper would have had to work very fast to take her photo and deliver it to Gordon's house before midnight."
Ruby placed the paper printout back on Richard's desk.
"I'm afraid it's looking like it is," Richard said grimly. "I've made some background checks. They're a fairly wealthy couple and they mix in the same circles as victim number one. These aren't random incidents."
"That's very commendable," Ruby said. "What have you found?"
Richard pushed his glasses back up the bridge of his nose.
"They both socialize at the same golf club once a week. It seems to be a ladies who lunch type of thing, for well-to-do women who have never worked a day in their lives."
"Sounds like I'd fit right in," Ruby winked, then remembered she was not talking to Ash, his predecessor. The ghost of his presence still lingered here, and despite everything that had happened, she still missed the silly sod. The loss of a colleague was hard to bear, but Ash's death had hit Ruby hard. Even now, she felt like she had blood on her hands. She cleared her throat.
"We need to speak to these women after we've dealt with Gordon. Do we know when the next meeting takes place?"
"Well, that's the thing. I looked at their online Facebook group and it's today at 11 a.m. Apparently it's to talk about Melissa. Maybe they're scared the same thing is going to happen to them."
"Good. It's in Coleman Street," Ruby said, reading the address from his notes.
"Shouldn't take us long. They'll probably panic when they hear Cheryl is missing too."
"Us?" he said, looking mildly horrified at the prospect of leaving the office.
"Yes, us. If we leave here around 10:30, we should get there in plenty of time. See what you can find out about this group of women before then. Anything outstanding, criminal records, bad debts. Pop into the Divisional Intelligence Unit. See if they can dig anything up. I know you don't have their dates of birth."
"That's no problem," Richard interrupted. "I've got most of that from Facebook."
Ruby smiled. A computer whiz with an analytical mind was exactly what they needed on their team.
"Good. Tell DIU we need it pronto. Perhaps Melissa and Cheryl had been mixing with some shady characters. You know how the well healed like a bit of rough sometimes." And Ruby did know this firsthand, given who she had woken up with that morning. She thought of Kathy, her daughter, a gangster for a father and police officer for a mother. No wonder she was mixed up. She swallowed, her throat dry. Right now, she needed a strong cup of tea. She opened her mouth to ask Richard, then sighed as her conscience told her to make it her bloody self.
"Can I get you a drink? Coffee, tea? I'll even stretch to a bar of chocolate from the vending machine, seeing as you've worked so hard."
Richard grimaced, barely affording her a glance as he clicked from site to site.
"No, thanks. I don't eat chocolate or drink caffeine."
Ruby blinked, wondering how he could function without them. How had she not noticed up to now?
"Do you go to the pub? I was thinking we're long overdue some team drinks. Maybe next weekend we can head next door after work. You up for that?"
"I partake in an occasional beverage or two," Richard said, offering up a polite smile before returning his attention to his work.
"Good. I'll arrange it with the team. Call it a belated welcome. Drinks are on me."
Richard nodded in approval as Ruby collected up the dirty cups and mugs littering the surrounding desks. The cleaners were due in any minute, but given the state of the office, they had enough work to do. She cringed as she caught sight of the remnants of an egg sandwich that had been ground into the carpet. She would have to have a word with the team.
An announcement on the tannoy requesting Richard's presence at the front desk notified them that Gordon was there.
"I'll take a statement," Richard said, rising from his desk.
Ruby raised her hand to stall his movements.
"Let me have 5 minutes with him first. Do us a favour, give D.C. Rutherford the heads up, will you? I've got a feeling we'll need an FLO involved."
They would need to put a family liaison officer in place in case anything further was pushed through the door. She would also request eyes on the property, although with budget cuts, they could probably only spare an hour or two.
Richard sighed as he sat back in his chair. "I hope we find Cheryl before it's too late. I can't imagine getting a finger in the post like that, much less photographs of a loved one being treated that way."
Ruby wanted to ask if he had anyone special at home, but Richard seemed the private type, and such questions were better asked in the pub.
"The killer seems to get off on hurting as many people as he can," she said instead.
Richard stretched out his arms, his muscles cracking as he moved.
"Time you took a break," Ruby said. "Stretch your legs first, grab some fresh air."
Richard nodded wearily, locking his computer as he stood.
"And Richard," Ruby said, giving him a backward glance as she pulled the door open. "Well bloody done."
Chapter 19. Gordon Barber was a portly but not unattractive man, with broad shoulders and striking blue eyes. His face filled with angst, he immediately rose as Ruby entered the small interview room.
"Thanks for coming in," Ruby said, pulling a chair from beneath the functional wooden table and sitting down. After formally introducing herself, Ruby waited for Gordon to speak.
"As I told the call taker, it's my wife," he said, perching on the edge of his chair. "She didn't come home last night. Then this morning, I found this photo in an envelope shoved under my door. I wasn't sure if the police could help, but Hannah told me to call."
"And Hannah is?" Ruby said, taking the photo from his grasp.
"Her best friend. She hasn't heard from her since yesterday. I'm worried. It's not like her to take off like this. The officer on the phone, he told me to come in."
"We thought it best to speak to you sooner rather than later, given your concerns," Ruby said, trying to inject some normality into her voice.
"Given this is out of character, we'll put some feelers out right away. We'll also take a statement covering her last movements. Is that okay?"
"Sure," Gordon said, looking a bit bewildered. "How serious is this?"
Ruby's throat tightened as she glanced at the photograph of the middle-aged woman lying on what looked like a bed. She offered the camera a woozy smile, her eyes half closed as she blinked, her mouth open as if caught mid-sentence. Just like with Melissa, she appeared happy and relaxed, but Ruby had a horrible feeling that it would not last for long.
"It's too early to say. Has she packed a bag? Any of her belongings missing?"
"Her handbag and phone are gone. The dress she's wearing in the photo, it's missing from the wardrobe. So are her shoes. And the picture, at first I thought it was Cheryl mucking around. But it's not, is it? And if she hasn't sent the photo, then who has?"
Ruby stiffened, his words a chilling reenactment of the previous murder victim's case. Unlike Melissa's husband, Gordon had not jumped to the conclusion that this was a kidnap attempt. But then again, he had not yet received her severed finger in the post. Ruby suppressed her growing turmoil. There may still be time to save this woman. They could start by putting a trace on her phone. Keeping her thoughts to herself, Ruby tried to offer as much reassurance as she could.
"I'm afraid I can't tell you anything until I've more to go on, which is why we need to take a statement while you're here."
A knock on the door signaled Richard's arrival. "He's keen," Ruby thought, before making a quick introduction to them both.
"DC Moss is going to take your statement, and we'll hold on to the photograph for now. Can I have Hannah's contact details?"
Gordon frowned.
"Is there something you're not telling me? You must get people reported missing all the time. Wouldn't a uniformed officer deal with this, or am I watching too many cop shows on TV?
We're just covering all bases, Ruby lied. Do you have any CCTV surrounding your home? The photo was hand-delivered, wasn't it?
It's live-streaming only. It doesn't record. I've been meaning to upgrade for ages.
His words trailed away.
Something's wrong, isn't it? Please, you can be straight with me.
Ruby sighed. Imparting information to family members was tricky at best. Say nothing, and she could risk him being exposed to the most horrific news. Reveal details of the previous case, and she was opening a can of worms.
We've had a similar case of a missing woman, but there's nothing to say this is linked to your wife's disappearance. Having said that, we may need to monitor your post. I know it's intrusive, but it may be of evidence forensically.
This similar case, how did it end up? Gordon said, interrupting her flow.
I'm not at liberty to say, Ruby replied. And it may have no bearing on your wife.
Did Cheryl have access to a computer?
Yes, she has a Dell laptop at home. Why?
We'll need to seize it and any other electronic devices in order to track her last movements. One of our officers will accompany you home when you're done here. I'm sure I don't need to tell you to keep your phone on at all times and call us if you hear from her. We'll give you a reference number in case you need to ring.
She turned to Richard and in a low voice spoke in his ear.
Leave a copy of that statement on my desk as soon as it's taken. Then request to triangulate Cheryl's phone.
Richard nodded, his face pensive. After taking Hannah's number, Ruby made a swift exit. She could not face any more questions because she had barely been able to look the poor man in the eye. The close-up of Cheryl's face offered no clues, just as with the previous victim the first time around. They would come later, when the killer's work was done. Cheryl was playing away. She had to be. But would she meet the same fate as Melissa? Why was this envelope delivered by hand? She would ask her boss for a unit to have eyeballs on the property, but it all came down to their budget in the end. Their last big case involved the fairy tale killer, and the resources needed had almost bled them dry. Ruby took a deep breath, stalling her racing thoughts.
Steady. Calm down. You might just be jumping the gun here. If there's one person who might know what's going on, it's Cheryl's best friend.
As she strode down the corridor to her office, she paused at the chocolate machine to buy a Twix bar. By the time she closed her office door, she had eaten one finger of chocolate and briefly quietened her grumbling stomach.
"Hello, am I speaking to Hannah Cowan?" Ruby said, swallowing back the last mouthful of chocolate. "My name is D.S. Ruby Preston. I'd like to speak to you about Cheryl."
The voice on the other end was well-spoken but hesitant, as if unaccustomed to speaking to the law.
"Oh," she said, as if gathering her thoughts. "Yes, I'm Hannah. I take it Gordon's been in to see you, then. Any news?"
"We're taking his report now. He said you're good friends." She paused, allowing the gravity of the situation to sink in.
"Have you any idea where she could be?"
No response. Ruby was beginning to wish she had made it a personal visit. "Hannah," she spoke firmly, "if you know something, then now is the time to tell us."
"Is Gordon with you?" Hannah said, an edge of caution to her voice.
"No, I'm alone in my office," Ruby said, pulling open her desk drawer to search for a pen.
"Did Cheryl mention where she was going, who she was meeting?"
"She did, but if Gordon finds out, he'll be so upset. And then there's the kids."
"Well, when I say kids, they're grown up now, but..."
"Please," Ruby interrupted. "This could be serious. Cheryl's not the only woman to have gone missing in similar circumstances. Did she give you a location? A name? I can assure discretion if that's what you're worried about."
She wanted to ask if Cheryl had been having an affair, but could not afford to put words in Hannah's mouth.
"To be honest, I'm worried. Cheryl shares everything with me. It's not like her not to call. She stressed that she'd be back before Gordon got home, but he said their bed's not been slept in. I'm scared something's happened to her, but I asked Gordon to report it so he wouldn't get suspicious about where she's gone. If he sees me getting into a flap, he'll know there's something wrong."
"And that something is?" Ruby said, finding a piece of scrap paper and wishing she'd get to the point.
"She was using a dating website for married men and women. It's called Debauchery. Only you won't find it online, at least not straight away. You have to go in through some online back door. I don't know, I'm not very technical. Anyway, it's by introduction only. I asked Cheryl if she could let me have a peek, but she was very insistent that I couldn't. I'm single, you see, but even so, I was a bit miffed. My money's as good as everyone else's."
"Details," Ruby said, making room on the desk and scribbling the name Debauchery on a scrap of A4. She was not interested in Hannah's bruised ego.
"I need details. All I can tell you is that she was getting all dressed up to meet this guy for what was promised to be the night of her life. She didn't have his profile picture, but he had lots of 5-star reviews, and... gosh, I don't know if I should be telling you this. The last thing I want is to have her arrested."
"As far as I'm concerned, Cheryl is a high-risk victim," Ruby reiterated. "I just want to keep her safe."
"Okay,"
Hannah gulped, her footsteps echoing down the phone line as she paced the floor.
"There were possibly drugs involved during this date too. Now don't get me wrong, Cheryl's never taken a drug in her life. When I asked if she was going to use them, she said she didn't know. It's a very high-class affair by all accounts. Probably ecstasy or coke."
"And she was meeting him where?" Ruby demanded, her fingers curling tighter around her pen.
"Somewhere in London, that's all I know. She didn't use public transport, so she may have ordered a cab. It's very cloak and dagger, though. I don't know why she couldn't have confided in me. It's like she was scared by what might happen if it got out."
Ruby's pen dug into the paper as she continued to take notes. Her sense of urgency fueled her actions, and she felt every muscle in her body tense. "So let me get this right. You said it was a dating agency, but what you're describing sounds more like an escort service. I don't know of any dating agency that involves the promise of drugs and then reviews the date afterwards."
"It's a bit of both, from what I gather. Lots of men and women cheating on their partners, but some dates are bought and paid for by people who want discretion guaranteed. After all, if you're only going to be unfaithful once in your marriage, you'll want to get it right. I think it was £2,000 for the top reviewed men. That includes a night on the town, a meal, and the hotel room. A 5-star, of course. If your date doesn't measure up, you can apply for a refund afterwards."
Ruby balked at the mention of such an extortionate amount. £2,000 for a shag? Such a price tag would surely limit their potential victims to the very wealthy.
"Did she tell you anything about this man? A name? Skin colour even?" "She said he goes by Matthew, but it's not his real name. He had a basic description of trim, white, average build young man. She said she'd be home by 2 or 3 in the morning at the latest. I told her I'd stay up so she could ring me with all the juicy details. But when she didn't call, I figured she was having too much fun. Then Gordon came back from a camping trip with his sons this morning and rang to say Cheryl wasn't at home."
"What did he say about the photo?" Photo? What photo? Hannah said. Ruby rested her pen and brought her hand to her forehead, leaning on her elbow as she spoke. She knew she was not going to get anything more of value from Hannah from this phone call. Gordon found a picture of Cheryl through his letterbox last night. Didn't he mention it?
No. I'd just woken up when he called me this morning. I was groggy.
Was she... okay? It wasn't one of those explicit ones, was it?
No, she looked fine. Look, Hannah, I'm going to be frank with you. There's something not quite right about this. I'm going to send an officer around to take a full statement. I need you to tell them everything you know, no matter how insignificant it may seem.
Ruby interrupted as Hannah took an intake of breath to speak. We'll be discreet. Gordon won't have access to our statements. But if you see or hear anything suspicious, you've got to let me know.
Very well, Hannah said, a tinge of fear creeping into her voice. She's going to be okay, though, isn't she?
I honestly don't know, Ruby said truthfully, a feeling of foreboding consuming her thoughts. After saying her goodbyes, she hung up the phone. The cases were connected. Everything pointed to that fact. She imagined Cheryl, terrified out of her wits as she was bound and gagged in a London hotel. They had to find her before photo two, when unspeakable things would be inflicted upon her. But where in this vast city was she? Ruby pushed open her office window, staring out at the streets below. If Mason Gatley murdered six women before being caught, then what hope did she have this time around? She briefly closed her eyes as a welcome breeze from outside kissed her skin. With good officers behind her and advances in forensics, she had to believe she was on the winning team. If she wasn't, God help them all. Chapter 20. Cheryl shifted her head to the left, her eyes blurred with tears. Pleading with her captor had been fruitless. He had regarded her with a blank expression as she cried silent tears, turning up the television to drown out the sniffles that followed. At first, she thought it was some kind of kinky game, and had been too spaced out to put up a fight. She even giggled as he pushed her onto her stomach before binding her knees and ankles behind her back. Was this what he had meant about having fun? There was nothing about masochism in his profile. She thought back. She had barely returned from the toilet before he gave her something sweet to drink. Just what was in that cocktail? And what else was in the rucksack that he pulled from the wardrobe that night? Once she was tied, Matthew had stepped back from the bed, wiped his hands on the back of his trousers, and turned on the TV. In stunned amazement, Cheryl had lain there, wondering what on earth was taking place. All of a sudden, she didn't like this game anymore. She half expected him to put on the porn channel to get them in the mood. But instead, some old Mel Gibson movie played out, while Cheryl lolled in and out of consciousness, waiting for the drug-induced fog to clear. "Let me go," she said, arching her back as the ropes cut into her wrists and ankles. Deftly, he had tied his knots, and as fresh fear drove its way into her thoughts, she realized he had done this sort of thing before.
"Do you hear me?"
she said, her voice splintering as it raised an octave.
"The game's over! Set me free!"
But Matthew just laughed at the television, a comedic moment in which the actor was dressing up as a woman to get a job. It was as if Cheryl was not there at all. This morning, she was awoken as he drew the blinds and light flooded the hotel room. Panic gripped her as she realized just how much time had passed. Calmly, her captor drank a bottle of water from the minibar, barely acknowledging her presence in the room. It wasn't until she threatened to scream that he glanced in her direction. Tutting, he reached for his rucksack on the floor. It clanked as he placed it on the table, and her stomach clenched in fear as she realized there were heavy tools inside. In that case, Matthew said, reaching for a black ball-shaped object, you'll have to wear the gag. Cheryl knew that this was no game. This man was here to hurt her. A ransom demand, or something worse. But why keep her overnight? Surely if he were going to sexually assault her, he would have done it by now. If anything, he went to great care not to touch her intimately as he bound her arms and legs. No! She spat, wrenching her head from left to right to avoid the hard rubber ball gag. But Matthew had immobilized her within seconds, tying the attached bindings to the back of her head. Now for another photo, he said, pulling his iPhone from his back pocket. But we just need to get the right look. What did he mean, another? Cheryl's heart was hammering so hard, she felt it was going to tear its way out of her chest. A vague recollection crept in of Matthew snapping their picture before. He had said it was an aircon remote, but she was too woozy to challenge him at the time. With fear-driven clarity, she realized the danger she had walked into. All for the sake of a bit of fun. What was her husband doing now she had not come home? Had he called the police? Had Hannah? Would they be too late? Matthew scrunched up his face as he held the camera phone aloft. No, you're not quite there yet. The mattress bounced as he sat on the bed. She flinched as he touched her hair, but he continued as if he were petting his favourite dog. Do you know what I'm going to do with you? His words crawled from his mouth like black-legged beetles, a terrifying contrast to his actions. I'm going to chop off your ring finger and send it to your husband, along with a photograph of you lying on this bed. There will be three pictures for him to pore over. This one's photo number two. Tomorrow we're going to take a very special one, but you won't be alive for that. Thin laughter escaped his lips. Shame, I'd love you to see it. Consumed with terror, Cheryl's eyes bulged as she tried to scream, but her panicked expulsion came out as a garbled moan, blocked by the gag fastened over her mouth. Shh, shh, there's no point in fighting it. Matthew rose from the bed. You put this in motion when you became a whore. You broke one of God's commandments. It's all you deserve. He smiled, holding his camera phone aloft once more. I'm going to wrap the rope around your throat and pull until you stop breathing. A chuckle laced his words. Bet you wished you were faithful now. Cheryl's eyes rolled to the back of her head, the whites flashing in the morning light. As she squirmed and fought against her bindings, they only served to numb her limbs even more. She was vaguely aware of the flash of a camera before Matthew returned to her side. There. All done. Sorry to frighten you, but the photo would have been a bit dull otherwise. He leaned closer still, his breath hot on her ear, as he whispered his final threat. If I were you, I'd start praying, because you've earned yourself a place in hell. Cheryl felt as if she were about to implode. Tightly bound, she was unable to move, the scream building in her throat searching for release. Adrenaline pumped through her veins as she tried to work out how to escape. The look in Matthew's eyes told her death was near. He leaned forward to stroke her hair one last time, the top button of his shirt undone. The small jingle of jewellery caught her attention, and she focused to see a gold band dangling in front of her nose. It was a wedding ring, just like hers. As he tugged at her ring finger, cold fear sliced through to her bones. He palmed her wedding ring before stepping away and undoing the chain around his neck. Another one for my collection, he murmured, threading Cheryl's ring onto the chain.
Unable to stop trembling, Cheryl tried to comprehend his words. She needed to focus, try to negotiate, find a way out of here. But what did he mean, his collection? And who owned the ring before? She thought of the person who gave her the referral. Just what had she gotten herself caught up in? She was an ordinary housewife, nothing special. Her heart drumming in her ears, she tried to slow her breath. He would remove her gag, she would offer him money, agree to his demands. But as Matthew rooted in his rucksack, she caught sight of a glint of steel. And all at once, she knew he was not going to let her go. Chapter 21. Are you okay to drive? Ruby threw Richard the car keys from across the desk. She felt bad for judging him for being boring. Unlike his predecessor, Richard actually cared about the people he dealt with. Job-weary Ash had failed to see outside his own problems when it came to ownership of the cases on his hands. To him, they had just been the means to an end, making light of the tragedies to get through the day. Richard may not be the most talkative of people, but he held a quiet dignity that carried to every aspect of his work. Regardless, Ruby knew that it took time to build up a level of trust, and having a new member on the team could be unsettling at first. It had also occurred to her that he could be a mole. Such people rarely formed friendships, because it made their betrayal much harder later on. The professional standards department regularly placed people into various departments, and she would not have put it past them to give Richard such a role. Had someone reported her for her criminal associations? Her connection with the Crosbys that made her feel paranoid. A team was only as good as its leader. Had Richard been sent in to keep an eye on them all? She gave Richard a curious glance. He drove as he worked, slow and steady, with careful consideration. She wondered what the ladies down the golf club would make of his old-fashioned sideburns and his M&S suit. She took a slow, soothing breath, her thoughts solemn. It felt strange not to be racing around like when she was at the wheel. The mood in the office was at fever pitch as they investigated the latest leads. A courier had been sent to the home of Gordon Barber with a small padded package from an unknown source. The arrival of the second photo and what was believed to be Cheryl's amputated ring finger had confirmed her worst fears. This case was connected to the last, and given the previous photo had arrived the night before, they were now on day two. Thankfully, it was intercepted before it reached Cheryl's husband's letterbox. If they didn't catch the killer, there would be one more photo to come. It brought with it a chilling conclusion. They had less than 24 hours to save Cheryl's life. She had known before she saw the photo that it would be grim. Just like the previous victim, Cheryl was tied up in submission, the rope connected behind her back to her ankles and wrists. Could it be the same rope used to murder the previous victim? Was he playing with the police, teasing them with similarities known only to very few? Cheryl's face still haunted Ruby's memory. Streaked with tears, her eyes were puffy from crying, her screams contained in what looked like a bull gag stuffed into her mouth. But just like before, the photo offered few clues of her location. They would come in the next photo, when it was far too late. It gave Ruby scant relief to see Cheryl's fingers still intact, but there was a damning sense of inevitability that she had tried hard to shake off. A flash of her police warrant card gained them access to the golf club. According to Facebook, the ladies in Cheryl's circle of friends were allowed special out-of-hours entry. This was no doubt facilitated by their hefty membership fees, as well as the sponsorship provided by their spouses' companies for the various tournaments that took place over the year. Highfield Country Club catered to many people, and judging by the glitzy decor, they were all well above Ruby's pay grade. Heads turned as she strode to the function room that overlooked the course.
The damp and drizzly morning brought few golfers out today. But despite the early